Welcome to the Simple Money, Simple Life podcast. I am Matt Erickson, and I'm your host. This is a podcast where we explore how simplicity beats complexity, especially in money matters. We explore investing, personal finance, and how to live a simple and awesome life. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 68, titled, Am I Frugal or Am I Cheap? Good to be bringing you guys another episode. Hope you're doing well. I personally am looking forward to springtime. We're still a little ways off. Another thing I'm really looking forward to is the March Madness college basketball tournament, which is coming up soon in probably a few weeks. And I'm a big Gonzaga Bulldogs fan, so I'm hoping that they can finally win a national championship this year. Been waiting a long time, and this year may be the year, but I've thought that before, and it just hasn't quite panned out for me. On a personal note, I had a recent, a few months ago, I had an eye surgery that is called lens replacement surgery, and it involves taking the lens of your eye and dissolving it with a laser and having a new lens put in. It's similar to cataract surgery. And so I had that done a few months ago, and then there's several follow-up procedures after that that have to take place. And so the second part of the process is after they let the lens settle in for a few months, they take a laser and put it into your eye and take the fogginess off the lens that was there to protect it while it settled into its permanent spot in your eye. Then the third step, which I just did yesterday, is they do a LASIK procedure to fine tune it to get you to 2015-2020 vision. And so this new technology that they have allows me to be able to see well for life, no contacts, no glasses, no reading glasses. It's relatively new, so it's pretty amazing technology that I was able to. It's kind of been a pain in some ways, a lot of appointments, a lot of eye drops, patients. There's right now I see halos around headlights at night, but supposedly that goes away after 6 to 12 months. But anyway, it's pretty liberating to not have to wear contacts or glasses. Once you hit the 50 range, which is where I'm at, they don't really think LASIK's a really great idea anymore, because what happens is the lens of your eye gets more brittle, and that is what causes you to not be able to see up close and need the reading glasses. So by putting a new lens in there, theoretically, no need ever for reading glasses, so that's pretty epic. I will not be one of those old dudes with reading glasses on my nose. So just a little bit of info on that. So getting into the topic about being frugal and cheap or cheap, I think it's a good topic to talk about. And a couple things, I want to go over some steps that maybe might give you a tip that you know you're maybe being a little too frugal, as well as 6 tips on how to know if you're being cheap. And then maybe the differences between the two. So number one on being too frugal, and some of these will cross over a little bit, but maybe you can identify which ones might apply to you. Number one on if you're being too frugal is you constantly stress about money and cash, and it's kind of always worrisome to you. That might mean you're being too frugal. Number two is you have to justify every purchase that you make. In other words, it's very hard for you to make a relaxing, enjoyable purchase, enjoy the item you bought. It's kind of hard for you to do that. Number three is you can't buy anything that isn't on sale. And so a lot of people who are too frugal tend to think that they have to buy everything on sale. I think proper frugality would be buying a less of items such as clothes, but buying higher quality. Number four would be putting your health at risk. So basically, I'm going to avoid going to the doctor because it costs money, or I'm going to avoid updating my glasses prescription because it will cost money to go see an eye doctor, or anything of that nature. Number five sign that you're being too frugal is you can't get rid of anything. So if you find yourself just grasping onto things and holding onto things even though you never use them. For example, if you have boxes and boxes in your garage or in your basement that haven't been opened in years, this may be you. And I think it's wise to consider the mindset of, hey, if I'm not using this item Why not put it in someone's hands who could use it and could appreciate it? Number six would be you always go for the cheapest option. So when you're at a restaurant, you're buying clothes, you're buying groceries, you always go for the cheapest option no matter what. Now I want to go over six ways to know if you're being cheap. Now this is the more dangerous part because this is the one that will impact relationships more and probably cause people to not want to be around you. So number one that you're being cheap is you don't tip well. We've all known that guy who doesn't tip at all well. Goes to a restaurant, gets good service from the folks there, and leaves a weaselly little tip. I personally think if you're going to go to a restaurant that has servers and people working to serve you, you shouldn't go there unless you can afford a good tip. I think 20% is the range we should shoot for. These people work very hard at their jobs and they're on their feet constantly. They have to be nice to all the customers, even the ones who don't treat them well. Please tip well. Being cheap is one who doesn't tip or leaves them a very small, modest tip. And I've known some pretty wealthy people who tend to do this, and I just don't understand it. It's holding on too tight to your money. Number two is you won't buy gifts or chip in on or contribute to gifts for a friend or family member, but you're just too cheap to give to others. You don't give to charities, you don't give gifts, and you just want to keep it all for yourself. Number three is you always want the friend of yours to drive and spend their gas money instead of you driving and chipping in. I've had a friend in the past who was this guy. He did not like to drive ever, and he always found an excuse for me to drive or other friends to drive because he was too cheap to spend money on gas. The next one is you don't really care about quality and you just buy things at the lowest price. So a lot of dollar store purchases and clothing that is cheap, even though the quality stinks. Number five is you hate spending money so much to a point that it physically pains you and stresses you out and causes you to feel badly. And number six is you tend to fight about money with your significant other a lot. So those are some signs that you might be being cheap. Now, if you're in up to your eyeballs in debt and you're trying to pay off student loan debts and credit card debt, sometimes there's a place for being cheap and being frugal. Sometimes you have to strap that belt up as tight as can be and cut all the necessities out to get yourself out of debt. So these don't necessarily apply so much when you're in that stage of life where you're just trying to get your head above water. You need to be cheap and frugal during those times of life. But these apply more to when you're more in a comfortable position. But due to your scripts of money growing up or your insecurities or your deprivation mindset, you tend to be cheap when you don't need to be cheap. Now, if this is you, then maybe it's time for some introspection and to maybe even get some therapy to discuss like why this tends to be you and maybe work on a plan to be less cheap, because most people don't like being around cheap people. Being around frugal people can be a different story. Now, I want to talk a minute about the differences. So cheap people believe that everything is too expensive. They hate spending in general, so they'll always complain about prices. A stingy person won't like spending $10 on a burger or even $5. However, frugal people understand that things cost money and will be savvy about their spending or look for alternatives. Frugal people will always prioritize friendships, hopefully, and people's living income over a few bucks. So when you go eating out with a frugal person, they may have picked a restaurant because of a good deal or a coupon they have, but they won't tip badly or complain about the prices. A cheap person might use coupons too, but try to save on tips. Next one has to do with generosity over greed. Frugal people tend to be more generous with their money. They still donate to charity, invite their friends to lunch, or have them over for dinner, and won't fret about saving a few bucks. Cheap people see their money as only theirs and won't enjoy spending it on others or even think about giving it away. And the other one, value over immediate savings. Think of it this way. Cheap people will tend to value money over time, while frugal people usually value time over money. A cheap person will spend hours searching for a good deal. It's more like a fun game to them to see how much they can save. But frugal people know when to stop and prioritize their time and the value of the product they are buying. They look for savings that are intentional, such as doing home workouts rather than going to the gym, and then spending that additional money on travel and other activities that they really care about. So they kind of eliminate all the stuff that doesn't matter so that they can really enjoy the things that do. Cheap people focus only on spending less no matter what, and frugal people focus on their priorities and understanding what it's worth. So anyway, those are some thoughts on cheap versus frugal. Now, on this podcast, I also want to dive into some more random topics. So one topic I've been thinking about lately that I know a lot of people have is how to handle a dual income. For example, in some households, the primary breadwinner will make the majority of the money, while the secondary breadwinner will make a lot less. That's kind of a common scenario. For example, there might be a man in the house who is the breadwinner and goes off to work all day, while the woman in the house takes care of the kids, but also maybe has a side gig or a side hustle on the side where she makes some additional income. Or obviously it could be reversed where the woman is the primary breadwinner. It doesn't really matter. So some people, like Dave Ramsey, teaches that my money is your money and your money is my money and it all needs to kind of be in one big pot. And that is fine if that works for you. What we do, and it's mainly because this is the way my wife likes to do it, and I've learned to kind of adjust to it, even though it was a little hard at first because I wanted to control everything. But what we do is, so my money, I make more than she does, so my money pays for most of the bills and the general expenses of the household. She keeps her money in a separate account. She is always willing to tell me what's in it, but she uses that for some of her own personal items, but she also will often pay for our family vacations, for example, or she'll pay for a sports league for the kids, or she might use her money to pay off one of our vehicles. So, and some people kind of have a rough time. Some men might have a rough time wanting their, and I guess it could be women too, I don't want to stereotype, but have their hands on all the money in the household. And what has worked better for us is for me to step back and respect my wife's desire to kind of be able to run that part of our finances on her own without me meddling in it, and to have that control. Otherwise, sometimes I think people get feeling like they're being parented by their spouse or micromanaged. For us, that's that style. We still have a lot of communication about it and talk back and forth about purchases and have money meetings together. But that approach has worked well for us. It's taken some mindset adjustment for me because I used to be of the mindset of it all had to be combined. But I think with good communication, transparency, and honesty, we have found our rhythm in doing it the way I just described. So not saying it's the way you should do it, but it's just worked well for us. I also want to talk about the random topic of something called the Rule of 72. And so the Rule of 72 is pretty cool. So it's a formula that is popularly used to estimate the numbers of years required for your money, your invested money, to double. So basically the way you do it is you take the number 72 and let's say you divide it by the interest rate. So let's say you're going to make 8% interest. So you divide 8 into 72, which is 9. So it would take your money 9 years to double, making 8%. So anyway, it's a really cool formula to kind of figure out back of the napkin math on how long it will take your money to double. So that's kind of cool and kind of helps you know what kind of interest rate to hope for or to shoot for, maybe how much risk to take in your portfolio and what kind of investments might be right for you. So that is the Rule of 72. It's kind of a helpful thing to think about when considering your investments. Another topic I just wanted to touch on really quick before finishing up today is, so my personal life has changed over the last couple months. So I, at my place of employment, I kind of worked my way up the ladder and eventually became the CEO or executive director of the company. And I did that for 9 months and was making more money than I've ever made. And I really liked the financial part of it. But what I realized as I did that job, I loved working with the people at the place I worked at and ran, but I really struggled with working with the people on the corporate level. And it was super stressful because I felt like there was a lot of micromanaging going on and a lot of questioning of decisions, and the style wasn't my style either. It was a more micromanaging and aggressive style, whereas the company culture that we had built was very different than that. It was built on positivity and strength based. And so after kind of considering this for quite some time, putting a lot of thought into it, I decided to resign from that very nice salary and that job. And I decided to still work there. I worked there. I was going to leave entirely, but the person who took my place and I decided that I would stay right now a couple days a week and do a lesser role that is not administrative in nature. And that has been really fantastic. So I work there 2 days a week and experience a lot of the positives of working there without all the stress of the corporate folks. So that was a tough decision to make because I was obviously going to, at least in the short term, take a pay cut. What I decided to do with my other 3 days of my work week is I decided to open up a private practice for mental health therapy. And so I have really enjoyed doing that and have gotten to know some wonderful clients and really feel like I'm able to help and make a difference, probably more so than I was as the CEO of that company. So, and I'm building that business and it's going really well. And it took a risk to do that. The other job was pretty consistent, high paying. And in order to kind of dive into the unknown, I needed to do something I'd never done before, which is to start my own business. And it took some research, it took some investigating, it took some hard work, it took some risk-taking and just being willing to step into the unknown. But it's been a great decision for me. And so I think there are some of you who might be listening where this could be helpful to think about is, for me, I have enjoyed my life much more since I made this choice. It has been less stressful. I feel like I'm in control more because I'm working for myself and I control my own schedule. And I really, as far as my private practice, don't answer to anyone other than my clients and myself. And so it's been a really good move, and partly why I have not been able to send out as many podcasts, because I've been putting a lot of energy into my own private practice and building my client base and so forth. But anyway, that's kind of a personal update on my life, and glad I could talk about a few random topics today. Hope you all are great. When I produce podcasts from now on, I used to be very consistent about dropping them, I think, on Fridays. The way I'm kind of going to do them for the next little while is just when I record one, I'm just going to release it immediately, and it could be at any random time. So anyway, I hope you will be willing to share the podcast with a friend. Remember, you can email me at simplemoney529@gmail.com. And I would love for you to review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And remember, the simple life is a good life.